Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Just reflecting on some of the interventions this morning, I think root causes are important, but that actually underscores the importance of non-criminal sanctions. You need to have dedicated programs to dig this up. But so that I think really shows the virtue of taking a very comprehensive criminal and civil, as well as human rights approach towards the root causes of racial discrimination. I'll address the remainder of my comments to the issue of the internet and internet speech. It's something that I think many countries are grappling with, not just only in the field of racial hatred, but misinformation and things like that. And we all know quite commonly when it comes to internet speech, I mean, I've always taken the position, if what is said virtually can lead to harm in the physical world, it should be subject to the reach of legal regulation. There is a school of thought that the internet should be the Wild Wild West. I don't subscribe to that. So when we look at internet speech, it's just a form of communications technology. The difference, though, is usually identified in terms of its virality, how the speed with which it can pass, its reach, its global, and its longevity. You can't scrub it out. I could also add, too, that it has, if you like, democratized or lowered the entry barriers into participation in discourse. Anyone with a smartphone can participate and, you know, issue a tweet. But herein lies the problem of internet speech. I've often struggled with the idea of how we are going to apportion blame or harm. There's a difference between someone who authors something and maybe puts it on a Facebook post and someone who forwards it. And usually something that you put on Facebook or Twitter or any of those social media platforms, 1,000 people can forward it in one day. So who are you going to single out? I take Professor Botha's point that sometimes it's not the first speaker that's important. It could be a very obscure point of view picked up by someone on the national stage who then has the platform and the listeners, and it becomes amplified. So I would agree with my colleagues that a contextual approach is very important. I think what we can do as lawyers is it's fine to say contextual approach, blah, blah, blah. We have to identify specifically what should be considered. The Rabat Declaration is a good starting point. I'm pretty sure we can build upon that as well. There are also problems because if just because the internet has a broader reach doesn't mean it causes more harm. I've actually written something and said, if I talk about a Singapore politician, no one in Djibouti is going to care. I've actually put it in a treatise that I wrote. I used Djibouti because I had just visited Djibouti. and that's another contextual factor, that sometimes you have to look not only at the speaker, but the audience. Because I very much doubt a European is going to care necessarily what's going to happen in a very far, let's say, Tuvalu or something. Or maybe they will. The Europeans tend to be very caring people, obviously. But, you know, there are limits to which we can have it. So you can't just kind of like assume, oh, internet, therefore, very broad. You actually have to see who's speaking, who's listening. And I think also in this area, also what the response is. Singapore courts have begun to grapple with online defamation. And when we look at the, you know, if defamation is about lowering esteem, how do you measure that? And I'm not a techie person, but I've had to read all the cases, obviously. It's things like how many people actually commented on the post, right? And what's the nature of the comments? Did it get violent? Like those kinds of things. So I'm pretty sure this is an area where delegates and their countries, they can share best practices, because we're all learning on a very steep curve, and this is an area where we should pay a little bit more attention. I'd also say that it's quite clear to me when you're dealing with racial hate speech online or offline that you need to have a mixture of hard and soft law. And by hard law, it's treaty law as well as domestic law, soft law, you know, codes of conduct. And herein lies the problem. As an international lawyer, I'm perhaps less optimistic about the possibility of imposing direct liability on non-state actors. In the instances where there have been, where non-state actors have been given rights and duties and privileges, they're very narrow spheres. The thing that might come to mind is ICSID, right? The International Convention for the Settlement of Investment Disputes. And that's pretty much because you had states behind it. states are willing to support it. So I would love if it was possible, but structurally I see a problem. So I would probably advise that the best approach is probably through national legislation. What you have is a treaty obligation that requires states to adopt effective measures. So what might an effective measure look like? We all remember the tragedy of Christchurch. And the big problem, of course, was that there were calls, shut it down, but they just took too long. And that's terrible enough as it is. But I'm also thinking about the precursor stage before it explodes. Perhaps one of the things, and we have to figure out the mechanics, is when someone posts something which seems to be getting traction before anything really explodes, you need to have some kind of legal mechanism which is able to respond very swiftly, like, you know, a government takedown order. This is what the approach in Singapore, we issue takedown orders. And if you refuse to comply with takedown order, then we're going to fine you $100,000. So Singapore takes a measure of these preemptive measures as well as fines. But that assumes that your national law is effective, right? I guess the Singapore approach basically is you hit them in the wallet where it hurts, because it's the only thing that makes a tech company take things down. There are many times Singapore has told Facebook, take this down, and Facebook will gradually take it down and issue a virtue signaling. Well, the Singapore government says this is illegal, therefore we are going to comply with the laws of the land where we're functioning. So there could be that. And let me say that while this is a legal way of doing it, I'm always a little bit concerned about censorship and free speech. I do not think free speech is an absolute right, but I come from a jurisdiction where the history is there were too many limits on free speech, right? So here's the problem. You need the government to act very quickly, but it can be self-serving. So you would have to probably put in a checks and balance, maybe a citizens commission or ombudsman who, you know, after the immediate danger is gone, who is able to kind of assess whether or not the government is being too trigger happy. But I would probably, I mean, these are all just preliminary thoughts, and my advice would be to have best practices, maybe a code of conduct, but also to have some kind of legal obligation which says you must have effective measures, and hopefully there'll be some kind of monitoring body which can keep all the governments on their toes. Thank you.